The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're also counting up the numbers. I mean, I sometimes wonder whether people haven't become a little bit war weary with all the numbers, you know, thousands and thousands of new cases and the deaths and trying to track how you're doing relative to the rest of the world and all these kind of per population statistics. I think we've all become not only experts on the diseases, but we've also become statisticians to try somehow to turn the numbers around. But what was really more fun yesterday was the purple lights that shone in Jerusalem to mark the International Day of Disabled Persons. And there were quite a number of iconic buildings across the city last night that were lit up in purple, including the famous Strings Bridge that you either hate or you love at the entrance to Jerusalem, including the Teddy Stadium near Malchum Hall, and including the building, the municipality building in Safra Square, but also something like 100 other buildings besides those iconic ones to mark this day. We spoke also very briefly about the fact that Israel has a representative now on the Special United Nations Committee for Disabled People. Israel suffers a lot from disabilities, unfortunately, because all of our population need to attend the army, and inevitably in the army people get hurt. Even those people who are supposedly lightly injured very frequently come out with some type of disability or another. It's a factor that we have to just accept within our society, as a result of which we find a lot of people who are active in the area of campaigning on behalf of disabled people, getting involved in the various sport disciplines for people with disabilities, the Special Olympics and things like that. So it's certainly a big deal here in Israel. And we mentioned that Tel Aviv was considered to be one of the most friendly cities in the world to allow for access for disabilities, for disabled people. So all in all, we have a certain focus and a certain interest in protecting the rights of those people who are disabled.
Yeah, absolutely right. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on in the show as well at 8:30. So do make sure to listen out for that. Blame and recrimination took hold of Israeli politics yesterday as a preliminary bill to dissolve the Knesset was passed. No surprises here. But who is really to blame for the situation?
Well, I suppose it all depends on who you ask. And of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu was on TV last night, almost campaigning. I mean, it almost felt like an election campaign broadcast, blaming Benny Gantz for the situation that we find ourselves in. He says the strap line that Netanyahu used was that, you know, Israelis want to hear about vaccines and not election broadcasts, and that he blamed Benny Gantz for dragging Israel to elections. Gantz should stop dragging Israel to elections. There's still time to prevent that from happening. Of course, Benny Gantz had his own moment to blame the Prime Minister for the fact that we are now going to elections, claims that if it wasn't for the fact that the Prime Minister is facing this criminal trial, that we wouldn't be going to elections. So he's insinuating that the Prime Minister is acting at a national level in a way which is helpful to his personal trial. But if we ask the people of Israel who is responsible for the situation, then there was a poll that was conducted by Channel 13 yesterday, and they asked people who is to blame for the election. 45% claim that they think it's Prime Minister Netanyahu. 20% think that it's Benny Gantz, and 25% think that they're both to blame. So it seems like there's quite a significant majority of people who do feel that Prime Minister Netanyahu has to carry most of the blame for what we're experiencing right now. But who's to know? I mean, everybody has their own different opinion on this matter. And Israeli politics is a very, very strange beast indeed.
So what happens now? What are the next steps?
We've had this initial hearing in the Knesset, which was passed by a majority of 61 to 54, which effectively puts us on the path now to an election, even though that's not been finalized yet. I was under the impression that we would come out of yesterday knowing finally that we're either going to election or not. Apparently that's not the case. There needs to be apparently three more votes in the plenum and three votes at the Knesset House Committee before this dissolution decision can become law and therefore enable the Parliament to disperse. I understand that the House Committee will convene on Monday to declare itself the committee that will legislate the dispersal bill. Some people are estimating that this process may take some weeks yet. Mm. Other people are saying it may take some months until we get to the moment that the Knesset disperses itself. So even in the process of trying to get to an election and to disperse itself, it seems as if we can't get any uniform decision, we can't get any views, and it seems like it's going to take at best a few weeks until such time as the Knesset is finally dispersed. In the meantime, I'm guessing that the current balagan carries on within our parliament. We don't have a budget, even though the finance minister did publish a timetable to have the budget approved. Now that we're heading towards elections, I'm not sure that the Knesset, that the Likud and the coalition government will have any interest to progress that published timetable for the approval of the budget. So not only do we not have a budget for 2020, which is now pretty much over, but we don't yet have a budget for 2021, which we're going into soon. And this is really very paralyzing for many aspects of the country.
No doubt about that. Let's just talk about Israel's new Sa'ar 6 warships.
Yeah, Sa'ar 6, you were right when you said
Is it Sa'ar 6? Okay.
Yeah, Sa'ar 6, because this is as opposed to the Sa'ar 5, which is a previous version. So yesterday, the new Sa'ar warship came into Haifa and was officially welcomed and added to the Israeli Navy. The Israeli naval ship Magen, meaning defense or shield, is the name of this new warship. The President Ruvi Rivlin and the Chief of General Staff, Lieutenant General Aviv Kochavi, were on hand at the ceremony to inaugurate the new ship. This is a really, really impressive piece of machinery. When we go through some of the things that it's able to do, the ship itself was manufactured in Germany in cooperation between Israeli industry and German industry, and has a lot of Israeli systems on board. And you know, when one goes through the kind of machinery that the ship has, then you start to understand how really impressive it is. It's able to conduct cyber and electronic warfare as well as the traditional warfare. It has missile defense systems. It has 16 anti-ship missiles. It has a 76-millimeter Otto Molara super rapid main gun. It has two Typhoon 25-millimeter remote weapon stations and two 324-millimeter torpedo launchers for lightweight torpedoes. But not only that, it has like an iron dome, what they call a naval dome. It has two of those mounted on the ship, interceptors for incoming rockets in case that the ship may be attacked or any targets around the ship may be attacked, that the ship has the ability to fire off these interceptors. And it is two Barak 8 batteries that could shoot down cruise and ballistic missiles that might be coming in onto the ship or anywhere nearby. So it has really massive weaponry on board the ship. The other interesting thing is that it has, of course, a naval pad to allow for helicopters to land on the ship. And it also has the ability to accommodate both male and female sailors. It's expected that lady sailors will make up something like 25% of the crew. And the idea of the ship is probably mostly to protect the new developing gas fields that the Israeli industry is seeing develop offshore in Israel. But when we think about the fact that the Navy is really the smallest of the three main arms of the IDF, and yet it has to probably cover the greatest mileage. When you think about the size of the coast of Israel, the length of the coastline of Israel, both at the Red Sea side as well as the Mediterranean side, and when you think of the area under the water, that needs to be covered in order to be protected along the coast of Israel, then one needs to understand that this is really a much larger task than the work that has to be undertaken by the ground forces to protect our borders and to protect the Israel's landmass, which is obviously relatively limited. But don't forget that the Navy also, besides protecting the coastline and protecting the natural gas rigs, also has to protect commercial shipping lanes, because 98% of Israel's imports coming by sea. So this is going to be a very, very important addition to the Israeli Navy, and will be the first of four of these ships that will be inaugurated over the course of the next few years, 2 to 3 years. So a welcome Israeli naval ship again to the Israeli Navy.
Incredible. Really, really, absolutely amazing. What's also unbelievable is Tesla will begin marketing its electric cars in Israel next year.
So this is, this is really quite an exciting story, because
I think so.
Tesla's really set to disrupt what has been traditionally the car market in Israel. I'm not quite sure if you guys have seen Teslas around your local area,
no,
with a Tesla active.
Not at all.
On your area. But the cars themselves are very impressive indeed for people who like a little bit of machinery and get involved in some of the new technology. The Tesla is really an impressive vehicle. And I think that the Tesla is very well suited to Israel, because one of the main limitations that electric cars have is they have a limit of the distance that they can travel before the batteries need to be recharged. And in some cases, the recharge of these batteries can take quite a while, maybe up to an hour. It's not like popping into a petrol station and filling up your car 10, 15 minutes and then continuing on your way. Sometimes the battery needs to be charged for an hour or so in order to allow you to continue on your way. With Israel having such relatively short distances to travel, I think that the Tesla type of vehicle, electric cars in general, I think are well suited to our environment. A lot of in-city travel. These cars, of course, as I said before, are amazingly impressive. We understand that the Tesla 3, the Tesla S, and the Tesla X models will be on the market probably during the second half of next year. And of course, the whole technology that comes with it, which is the battery recharging and even the battery manufacturing. When you look and see what Elon Musk and his band of merry men have managed to achieve with the production of these very, very impressive battery cells, which of course they do in-house, then, you know, for the Israeli industry in general, it becomes a very, very interesting proposition. Israelis, of course, are very interested in the technology that's being used. And we understand that Tesla 3 has something like a 440-kilometer range with the battery fully charged. It's going to cost around 300 to 320,000 shekels. Could be a little bit lower than that. So that's what, in your money, something like 1.5 million rand. That sounds like quite a lot of money to me, 300,000 shekels. But obviously saves a lot on fuel consumption and is cool, very cool.
It really is absolutely amazing. And Unscience says Howard Saxton will be the first to get a new Tesla in South Africa. He might well be, but it's unfortunate that they're not here yet. And I'm not even really sure when there's any intention of bringing. Nobuchle, do you know when Tesla will actually be available to us?